Good morning. The Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration will come to order. Members, we have continuing review of the proposed House budget this morning, and we want to get right into it and get started. So I guess before that, we should approve the minutes of March 28th. Representative Freiberg reluctantly moves the minutes of March 28th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Okay. So the first thing, do we have a calendar to do, too?
No.
Okay, that's old. We are going to ask Ms. Julek to come forward and get started again. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Barb Julek, and I'm the controller for the House of Representatives. Last week, I gave a brief overview of the House budget situation for 18-19 and the proposal before you for 2021.
Ms. Julek, could you pull the microphones in front of you? There we go.
Thank you. And I'll just take a minute to review that before we get started with a little more detail. As you may recall, and as in outlined on one of your handouts, is a budget memo dated March 26. The 18-19 budget has been running an operating deficit due to the increased member salary that was implemented in fiscal 18. Taking the 18-19 budget as a starting point and adding the most recently proposed legislative increase that came out last Friday from the Legislative Salary Council, and recognizing costs for redistricting, but holding everything else current, the House would go into the 2021 biennium with an operating deficit of $5.1 million for the biennium without an increase to our appropriation. Again, assuming some emergency equipment replacement needs that you will see a bit later in the presentation, I will presume the overall carry forward amount spending to be closer to $5.5 million in 2021, leaving our fiscal 21 carry forward balance at the end of the biennium of about $2.3 million. And absent any other changes, the House would likely run out of carry forward funds sometime in fiscal 22. And this, under this scenario in this budget, we would not have addressed any of the NCSL study recommendations. We would not have addressed some of the staffing issues that have that we'll see that have come up, or any of the IT and facility needs that have accumulated over time. The budget proposal before you does take these things into consideration, and it does request a budget that is $10,169,000 higher, or 14.61% higher than the overall spending compared to 18 and 19. The budget also requests, aligned with that, an appropriation increase of $11.5 million to address the operating deficit associated with the member salaries, to create a pool of funds to address the NCSL study, and funding for a number of positions, including 2-to-1 staffing ratios and redistricting staff. Prior to going into the details of this, I would like just to briefly review what kind of spending categories we have in our budget. Here's a one-page handout, looks like a table showing the 20 and 21 breakdown of the budget and what kind of by spending category. The first major spending category is salary and benefits. This portion of the budget represents 93% of our operating budget. This includes salaries and benefits for members and staff, and benefits including insurance, various payroll taxes, unemployment, and workers' comp. This area also includes session per diem for members. Again, that's 93% of our budget. The next major portion of the budget is called travel and subsistence. This represents about 3% of the overall operating budget. It includes interim per diem, housing, district travel, session mileage, and then staff and member travel reimbursement. And again, this is 3%. The last category is kind of where all the non-salary, non-member, non-partisan operating things come into play. And this is about 4% of the budget. The one member thing it does include is communications reimbursements for the members, but otherwise it's more of our operating budget. This includes telephone costs, postage, printing, training, the high school page program, maintenance contract on all our major systems, including HR and accounting system, our servers and other IT systems, all our annual license agreements, such as our email, our listservs, and department-specific software needs. It includes our streaming services costs, our utilities, our office supplies, and miscellaneous costs, such as signage and such. And again, this represents about 4% of the operating budget for the house, not including one-time investments or replacement needs, just kind of the, your day-to-day stuff. And so at this point, Mr. Chair, I would stop, and my understanding is we would have division directors come up and explain some of the spending that would occur in this 4% area and some of the issues and needs we have.
Thank you, Ms. Julek. Yes, we're going to start with Mr. Meyerson, if you could come forward. So we're going to have Mr. Meyerson, Mr. LeGrave, and Mr. Spiker come forward to present on their department's requests. Mr. Meyerson, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Winkler, members, Bob Meyerson, Chief Sergeant of Arms for the House, and look forward to the opportunity to talk about the Sergeant's Department and just give a brief overview of what we do and who we are and how we get it done. We have a mission statement for the Sergeant's Department and essentially states that we provide for the facilities and environment for members and staff so that they can conduct business, and we do this. We meet our mission by a staff of 7 full-time. I have 2 assistants, and basically our department is divided into 2 sections. We have the administrative area, and we also have the facility services. So it's myself and my assistants as well as the facility services, which is headed up by Steve Munoz. We had the ability to hire this year 21 full-time equivalents, and they take care of the educational programs, the high school page program, our committee pages, as well as our retired troopers that staff the chamber and as needed at the committees. So we're in our 5th year now that we professionalized this department. In doing so, we were able to make some advancements. We're non-political, nonpartisan, and it gives us the ability to have continuity as we transition from one party to the other and establish standard operating procedures that transcend these 2-year cycles, as well as looking for continued efficiencies in our operations. And last but not least, we have the ability to give expert consideration to security and safety matters. The duties and responsibilities of the sergeant's office is, I think, much greater than people initially think of. When they consider what the sergeant's office is, right away we consider safety and security, but we do so much more, and I'd like to take the opportunity to talk about those a little bit. With regards to security, we take care of the access control, the key cards, the hard keys. We have over 1,200 hard keys, unique hard keys that we inventory and maintain for the house. We're the primary liaison with the State Patrol, Capitol Security, and other law enforcement agencies. In addition to these matters, we take care of the parking management in the State Office Building ramp, Lot D and Lot N on the north side of the Capitol. We oversee the committee pages, the hiring, and then the management of the committee pages, the educational programs, which involves the high school pages, and the internship programs within. We have mail activities that really take up a tremendous amount of time, the incoming mail, the metering of mail, the mail stamp management, metering, and then managing the postage allotment for all members and departments. We take care of all purchasing for the entire house, the purchasing of goods and services. We procure all supplies. That includes stationery and anything else you need, paper clips, pencils, pens, and anything else that you get behind the closed doors. We take care of the telecommunications. We have the voice over internet VoIP system, and it's very complicated, and we have one full-time person that takes care of that. All of duplication services, which we'll talk about here in more detail this morning. We have environmental issues, everything from the heat and air conditioning, the carpet, the paint, and everything else in house areas, and then safety, of course, the emergency response manual, first aid supplies, and anything to do with safety and security. We have some challenges and needs in the sergeant's department, and I put them into three different categories: staffing, space, and some aged equipment, and that includes the furniture and copy machines, which we'll also be referring to again later. With our high school PAGE program, we have some staffing needs there. It's a vibrant, I'm very proud of what we do with the high school PAGE program, but we have some needs and oversight, after-hours oversight of our PAGEs. We have some ongoing needs with security. We've made some adjustments to staffing with regards to security. We've hired these retired troopers who have a background in executive protection and capital security, and I think that we have some needs to do more in that area as well. We have some needs for year-round administrative support. We've taken on, as we professionalized, I think we've taken on some more responsibilities, and we need the support to be able to facilitate that. And there are some areas of staffing within our supply area as well. It goes right along with the security areas. We're going to be making some adjustments to the loading dock, and we're going to need some assistance in staffing that, so that as we invest in the loading dock barriers, that it's not good money wasted without the staffing that it will also require. We're a unique department in that we have the majority of our staff that facilitates the needs of the this institution. We hire during session. 21 FTEs is a challenge to bring on temporarily to find good quality qualified people, so that is a challenge. We have some space needs and challenges as well in our administrative offices. We have the need to be a little bit more accessible, visible, and functional for the business needs of the department. Within facilities, we have the need for secured storage, staging, and climate control space for our supply. And then last but not least is furniture. We are using furniture in the members' offices that was purchased in the early 70s, some of the furniture. We have legislative assistant workstations that were not designed ergonomically for what we are using now for computers. If you had an IBM Selectric, maybe a little bit more appropriate. In addition to the lack of design for modern technology, we're dealing with parts and pieces that we can't fix anymore. Bill Bruner has been using duct tape and Gorilla Glue and used parts from others, and it's just not working anymore. So we have some great needs there. And then the printers, we're using some aged technology that has reached end of life, and I know that you're going to be dealing with that. Thank you.
Questions from members for Mr. Meyerson. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just wanted to comment especially on that last piece. When I was staff in 2005, we were talking about replacing the workstations for legislative staff. So, I mean, this is not – we knew it was a problem then, and I'm sure it's even become more of a problem in the last, 14, 15 years. So I appreciate you bringing that forward, because I think it does matter as far as, people's well-being and their ability to function as efficiently as they can. So, thank you.
Mr. Meyerson, any comment? No? Okay. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Meyerson. I just want to say thank you for a difference that you've made while you've been, and hats off to the Republicans for bringing you on board. But I feel a lot safer, and it's a very serious place that we're in, and not only for us and our staffs, but our guests. And I very much value that you're taking your job serious, and I feel very happy with the work that you're doing and the safety you're providing for all of us. Thank you.
Okay, seeing no further questions. Ms. Julek, were you going to review the budget areas, or should we go to Mr. LaGrave? Mr. LaGrave, could you please come forward? Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Barry LeGrave, Director of the Nonpartisan House Public Information Services Office. To fulfill our mission, we rely heavily on technology. And this proposed budget meets many of those technology needs and meets almost all of our critical needs. And I'm going to go over three areas of general issues that we find our needs. Replacement end-of-life equipment, maintaining our existing technology, and also investing in select long-term technology. In the replacing end-of-life equipment area, a couple of items that we're dealing with. In our TV area, we have something called a multi-image processor that has failed this past interim. This is the device that displays in our two TV control rooms all outgoing feeds. So those are outgoing feeds for our broadcaster TPT, our outgoing feeds for our 2 24x7 live video streaming, outgoing feeds for the Capitol Press Corps, and outgoing feeds to the 9 cable channels that the House has on the cable system. That device failed this interim. Instead of attempting on short notice a repair with the vendor, we put in place a workaround, sort of a Band-Aid in effect, to get us through this session. So this coming interim, we're going to be facing a decision about a replacement or repair on that device. A second area of end-of-life equipment relates to our biggest public outreach that our department does every year, and that's the House booth at the Minnesota State Fair. The State Fair backdrop and the State Fair counter that we have are over 20 years old. And in 20 years of moving between the state office building and the state fairgrounds and back and forth, setting up and being used intensively for those 12 days at the fair, the portable backdrop connectors and panels are starting to not fit, not beginning to fall apart, and the counter is becoming chipped and a little unstable. So our hope is to replace the backdrop and to repair that counter. In the second area of maintaining existing technology, as part of the Capitol restoration, the House and Senate TV facilities were rebuilt as high-definition, brand-new facilities. That was completed for the House in January of 2015. In January of 2017, the two-year warranties expired. So we are operating without a service agreement in place for the TV facilities or warranties. So our goal is to put in place a service agreement for the very core equipment that we need to continue to function. Not all the equipment, but just the core basic equipment. If we're not able to put in place a service agreement, this proposed budget does include funds to support not only the TV, but our department-wide issues, repair and replacement, based on our past experience on repair and replacement. And the third area is investing in select long-term technology. And there's three examples of that. Our video and audio signals from the Capitol come over via fiber into the basement here of the state office building. They went into an equipment rack, they went into another rack, and then up to our TV control room. As part of the Capitol restoration, one of those TV racks was taken out. As a result, we have a couple of splices in this important fiber optic line that are unnecessary points of failure. It's not a very expensive fix. It's not a very involved fix, but it fixes a potential point of failure on some important signal paths between here and the Capitol. Another example is a spare committee room camera. In committee rooms like this, you'll see over my shoulder and there and behind four small pan-tilt zoom cameras. As part of the Capitol restoration, four House committee rooms were built out with these four cameras. So we have 16 cameras. We do not have a spare camera. So if one of these cameras goes down in a committee room, there's a chance that it's going to significantly impact the production or probably take the room out of commission from a TV standpoint until we get that repair. So our goal is to have a spare camera on the shelf, and then if we have an issue with one of the cameras, we can relatively quickly swap in a replacement camera and get the committee room back in function as far as from broadcasting. And the last area of investment in long-term technology is putting TV broadcast cameras in the basement. As you know, we have cameras in CAP 120 across the street, In this building, we have TV cameras in room 5, this room, and also room 200. The basement, however, in the state office building does not have TV broadcast cameras. As a result, every biennium, the committees that meet in the basement, those issues don't get as wide distribution to the public as other meetings. So this year, the Commerce Committee, State Government Finance Division, Government Operations that meet in the basement, they don't get TV coverage of those issues unless they happen to shift into one of the TV rooms. So that's the three main areas: replacing failed end-of-life equipment, maintaining our existing technology, and also investing in some select long-term technology. So our department strives through everything we do, the TV area, the photography area, the session daily publications area, to assist the House in providing openness and transparency to the public and provide services to members, staff, and the public. To do that, our department, like many departments, relies heavily on technology. So we believe that this budget meets many of our technology needs and certainly meets our critical technology needs. So I'd be glad to answer any questions that you may have.
Questions from members? Okay. Thank you, Mr. LeGrave. Mr. Spiker, if you could come forward, identify yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Mike Spiker. I'm the House IT Director. The House IT is an office of 8 professional IT developers, network engineers, and desktop support. We support all House IT-related fields, such as security email, storage, internet, development, website development, for all offices, the budget and accounting systems we support, as well as the time card, and the streaming systems for our video and audio streams to the world. We also support the caucus's IT in procurement and for their network storage needs as well. The IT budget, we're going to talk about specifics to major purchases or virtualization. In 2014, we had approximately 18 standalone servers, and we migrated it to a single storage unit that is now coming of age, both in its number of years it's been operating, but also in the amount that it can store. We're also looking at improving our backup systems. We currently have 1 year of incremental backups, so after 1 year, we don't have the files that you may find necessary. And we're looking at supplementing our disaster recovery system with a cloud-based disaster recovery system, and also co-locating in a different location. We currently co-locate our disaster recovery in the Senate building. Another major purchase is moving our email system from GroupWise to Office 365, which will cover not only our email, but our office products and Skype for Business, as well as giving you the opportunity to have office products and at your home or on your devices. Another area that is coming end of life is our access points. Those are the Wi-Fi APs that you see around the state office building. They were bought in 2014, and with new and emerging technology becoming outdated. And then lastly, I'd like to talk about your email listservs. We're looking at replacing that with a more robust gov delivery system that will give you the opportunity to take advantage of citizen subscription networks, as well as improved citizen connectivity and cross-point publishing to social media, as well as our House website. And I'll stand for questions.
Mr. Spiker, just to be clear, the transition to Outlook from GroupWise is not funded in the current budget. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Any questions from members? Okay, thank you. Ms. Julek.
Mr. Chair and members, at this point I'd like to hop to the handout we started reviewing last week. Fiscal 2021 budget proposal. There should be a backside that explains the appropriation request and then a third page that explains the carry forward request. Just quickly on the front of that sheet, as stated earlier, this budget is requesting a $10.1 million increase. That would be proposed to be funded from three resources. The first would be a $76.3 million general fund appropriation. As stated earlier, that's about 11.5% or $11.5 million above current appropriation base. There's also an assumption that we would continue to receive $128,000 in a healthcare access fund transfer that we get from the LCC every biennium. And then usage of $3.376 million from carry forward funds for one-time investments for some of the things that you just heard from the prior three testifiers. Moving into the actual appropriation request, so again, moving to this document right here. All right, lost my place. All right, so we are requesting $11.5 million. Over 40% of this request is related to member salary increases implemented since 2017. So this $4.7 million being requested would cover the increase that went into effect 2 years ago, plus the upcoming increase that would go into effect this coming July. In addition, a small portion of this request would also pay for the increased employer share of retirement that's going into effect July 1st, 2019. We're going from a 6% to a 6.25% employer share reimbursement. The second area of request is related to staffing. We are requesting a $2.448 million increase. This includes five redistricting staff budgeted at 2.5 FTEs as they would come on toward the last 6 months of the biennium. This also includes adding 14 permanent staff. This would implement a 2-to-1 member legislative assistant ratio, or member to legislative assistant ratio, and this would impact all three caucuses. And it also requests one additional IT support staff for the majority caucus. Also within this request is a request to enhance the high school page program, as Mr. Meyerson referred to. This would allow for a chaperone component of that program and add a little bit of safety and security to our current program with that.
And as Julie, just so members are aware, there is currently no chaperone at the hotel when the pages are staying there for the week. And think for yourself whether that's a great idea for us. Ms. Julek.
Yep. And then the final part of this $2.4 million request is for all the FTEs. It does include funds for computers and workstations and any associated payroll cost with those positions. Third area of funding is a request to establish a pool of funds to implement salary adjustments based on the NCSL study presented last week. As you recall, the study had a series of recommendations and observations, including the need to adjust salary ranges to reflect the market, the need to reclassify certain positions, the need to provide equity adjustments, that we should be reviewing requirements for promotional changes, and that we should develop a system to keep ranges and salaries at the current with the market. To that end, this budget does include a $4,163,000 request for salary and payroll cost. A small part of this request, about $80,000, is to cover the increased employer share of retirement going into effect July 1st for the employees. But the balance of the request is directly related to the NCSL study and recommendations from that. So this would include funds to move positions to the new minimum ranges. As we looked at that study, every category of position was the minimum range was changing, and we talked about that in affecting about 98 employees. So this would bring those people up. This would also account for the reclassifying of positions, and anyone moving into that new classification below that minimum would also be impacted by this request. And then in addition, this request would include funds to implement other adjustment options that the House would have to address things like equity to deal with compression of salaries as we move that lower range up, and also to implement COLA and or merit increases over the biennium, and again, to keep pace with the market over the next 2 years. Finally, this
portion of the budget request assumes a change in our promotion policy based on the NCSL recommendation that we review eligibility for promotions after 2 years for certain positions and 3 years for other versus the current policy, which is a 3-year wait and a 4-year wait. So it moved that up a year. And if this policy were adopted, we would better align with the current Senate promotional policies, and they recently implemented changes there. Any final decision of how funds would be used to implement adjustments related to the NCSL study will, in the end, be dependent on how much funds the House actually gets appropriated and has to work with. The next category of increases, I'm just going to, we aren't requesting money for this category, but just to let you know that health insurance, we are projecting to have about just under $1 million of increase in costs there. We are able to absorb this and some other minor cost increases, and by the way, we developed our starting point of this budget. As I mentioned last week in starting the preparation, I was able to reduce my starting point of salaries. After we went through the transition, our starting point of salaries was about $1.2 million below where we had budgeted in 18-19. Bringing that down, I'm able to absorb within this budget the increase for health care and some other minor other little changes throughout the budget. The last category of request is just in other costs. This $200,000 is for an assumed two mini sessions occurring in the upcoming biennium, estimated about $100,000 each. Cost of the mini sessions would include member mileage and per diem, member and staff lodging, staff expense reimbursement, and transportation cost. And again, this would assume two mini sessions coming up. There are other cost increases in the operating budget, such as some of our IT maintenance costs. Mr. Spiker referred to the listserv changes that will create a slight increase there, some software licensing increases. We've experienced some severance cost trends and temporary staffing trends that have been taken account. And again, these increases have all been offset by that $1.2 million starting point that I referred to below. And then, Mr. Chair, if there's no questions on the $11.5 million, I would move to the carry forward.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question. So you had mentioned that there was one additional FTE for IT in for the majority only. I happen to know that we have a session only. We have a full-time and a session only in the minority, and it's incredibly hard to find a session-only IT person that has that skill and ability to keep us up and running. And I'm just wondering what was the thought process behind only one additional FTE for the majority and not for the minority, converting that from a session only to a full-time.
Ms. Julie.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my understanding is the majority in the past has had two full-times and the minority has had one full-time. So this would put in place for the current majority that second full-time that had been in place with the last majority. That makes sense. But not taken up.
I see. Representative O'Neill.
So I would just ask, I know that it's really difficult for the minority to find somebody that's that talented and that skilled for IT just a session only. It's incredibly challenging, and it's hard to have continuance of service. So I just ask that if you're going to do it from the majority, do it from the minority, please.
Representative O'Neill, I certainly am open to that conversation with your caucus about what the IT needs are for the minority. We do have a move to 2-to-1 staffing for the minority, essentially, which is a significant cost, but maybe we can talk about kind of how to allocate funds within this proposed dollar amount and look at whether an IT position might be a better spot for at least one of those people.
I'd appreciate the conversation. Thank you.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I may have missed this, but I wanted to ask about the funds coming from the healthcare access fund, or the transfer coming from there. And I'm just curious about how that amount was decided in the proposal. Again, my apologies if I missed that reference, Ms. Julek's remarks.
Ms. Julek.
Mr. Chair, members, I might have to phone a friend on this one. My understanding that since the inception of the Healthcare Access Fund, which I think goes back to like 1992, there has been an appropriation for legislative activity. How that was originally put in or what mechanism it got to the legislature, I'm not exactly sure. But currently, the LCC has appropriated $128,000 a year.
that they are authorized to use for any of their costs related to if there is a joint commission on health care related issues or health care access fund issues. To the extent they do not, to the extent they have funds left over within that appropriation, they then may transfer them half to the House, half to the Senate, based on what the House and Senate can demonstrate they have in cost related to health care policy formation, things like that. So we have positions, obviously, on the health care committee that relate to these type of activities, and so we can demonstrate to the LCC that we spend at least $64,000 on cost related to health care activities. And so once we demonstrate that, and to the extent they have not spent money or all the money, we can receive that transfer.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just quick follow-up. It sounds like then, interestingly, that it's based on health care policy, that to the extent that we're working on health care issues related to health care policy, as opposed to health insurance for members or staff. Am I understanding Ms. Julich right? That's just interesting. She can just clarify if I'm understanding that right.
Mr. Chair, I think I'd have to actually look back and see exactly what the LC is looking for us to demonstrate, but we demonstrate it with staff assigned to health care committees.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Olafsky.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to know if there is any lingering effect of the 2017 special session and the subsequent line and a veto of the legislative budgets on the budget that is before us now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Polsky, when the veto went into effect, my understanding is that we worked with the LCC and in essence borrowed funds from their appropriation to operate until the point in time we got an appropriation back. And those funds have all been repaid to the LCC. So those funds have been repaid, and so then our official spending for fiscal 18, when this would have been impacted, are only on House either appropriated funds or carry forward funds for that year.
So, Representative Pulaski. Mr. Chair, it's just to underscore the discussion we had on the House floor last week that there is nothing special about a special session.
Further questions on the operational budget proposal? Okay, I think you can go ahead to the one-time funds.
Yep, Mr. Chair. So the last handout, just a very similar table about one-time funding requests coming out of the carry-forward funds. Four categories. First category is $700,000 to implement some remodeling of the first floor. This would be based on a estimate done through a architectural firm on what it would take to remodel the first floor and allow the House research and fiscal analysts to move into that space. And this is based on a recommendation made by the House Space Planning Committee a couple years ago, I believe, and this would move forward on that recommendation. The second category is end of life. You heard a lot of comments from the various directors on end of life equipment. There's $2 million allotted for end of life. This includes duplicating machines in both the facilities and chief clerk's office, which I'll go into in a bit. You heard Mr. Spiker talk about a backup solution for the ARC server that's in there. We have a number of end of life equipment relating to Wi-Fi access, including hardware, controllers, core switches. You heard Mr. Spiker talk about the SANS server. It says SANS service on your thing, but it's really SANS server. Our meter machine is at end of life. Our defibrillator machines are at end of life. You heard Mr. LeGrave talk about the image processor. And then Mr. Meyerson talked about furniture. And what this budget would propose is a phased-in approach to furniture and workstation replacement. We have over $2 million of identified needs. This would start phasing that in, hoping to account for 40 to 50% of it at this point in time. Under enhancements, we would look at migrating our email system to Outlook.
So that would be part of this proposal. Mr. Gray talked about some audiovisual upgrades that are in here. Being able to broadcast out of the basement is in here. We are looking for some enhancements in our facilities area right behind us. Right now we have a lot of humidity problems, and so when you order and store a lot of paper and it gets impacted by humidity, they can't run it through the machine, and so we'd like to deal with that. And then some accessibility issues regarding our hearings and being able to put in place an assisted listening hearing loop, so those with hearing impairments are able to hear within the hearing rooms. And then we have a backlog of hearing archives that need to be captioned, and we would look to catch up on some of that. And then other equipment, you heard Mr. LeGrave talk about the state fair and some photography room equipment that would be in here. And then we have reached our computer monitor replacement cycle, and so we would be looking to implement that. In total, that is about $3.3 million, or a little under $3.4 million of carry forward spending just on one-time items. With that spending and where I assume we will end this biennium, plus the spending, I would assume that at the end of fiscal 21, we would have a carry forward balance of about $4.4 million. And as I mentioned last week, this is equivalent to about 2 months' worth of our summer spend rate, basically in case of shutdown. And
go ahead.
I was just going to say, Mr. Chair, just to give a little bit of background on the duplicating issue. As mentioned, this budget does include funds to replace some duplicating machines in the chief clerk's office and facilities. At the end of last session, like I think literally 2 weeks after session ended, we had two duplicating machines reach end of service and were no longer usable and needed to be replaced. These two machines were around 12 years old, but they were our newer machines, quite frankly. Our duplicating fleet includes equipment anywhere from 12 to 25 years old. And a lot of them are becoming end of life, end of service, and some of our service providers may no longer provide service to these things in the near future. Standard replacement cycles are around 5 to 6 years. Prior to spending any funds on replacements, there was a team of staff from the chief clerk's office and facilities and myself who reviewed our risks and our options for duplicating functions and replacements for house floor activities and committee activities. This group proposed a short-term solution for the two machines that had reached their end of life and replaced them with kind of an equivalent machine. Just to meet this year's session. But looking at the long term, we want to look at a broader look at long term solutions. What we learned right now, we have three very large DocuTech machines that are kind of our workhorses. These are anywhere from 20 to 25 years old. They are becoming end of service, end of life end of service machines. If we were to replace the proficiency rate of these machines, meaning how many pages we can produce a minute, we would have to buy three machines, very expensive machines, for each of these three machines, meaning 9, 3-to-1 replacement. We would need to spend well over $1 million to meet that proficiency rate, and we would need to find space for these machines. We are not proposing that, and we don't want to go down that road. Instead, what we are proposing in this budget is to hold about $430,000 within the budget. We would look to immediately invest in $60,000 of software. The software would allow us to create proficiency on the front end. How do we receive our jobs? How do we send jobs to duplicating machines? Right now, you receive it and you send it to a machine, which then breaks down, and then you fix the machine, or you send it to another machine. This software would allow you to send a job or multiple jobs to multiple machines at the same time, and the software would control it. If it breaks down, it would go here. If that breaks down, it goes here. If this is done, we can add this one. And it's a little more of an orchestration versus a one-to-one thing. So that's kind of our first step of creating some proficiency. It also allows us to connect our two duplicating areas. We can coordinate better across. If we're really busy over here, not so busy over there, we can start, again, orchestrating across-wise and vice versa. Second, we do have some other smaller machines that are end of life that we would look at immediately replacing toward the next session and spend about $100,000, under $40,000 with those. And that would, I think, be about six or seven machines between the two entities. And then we would still have DocuTechs on board for one more session. We would look at next session implementing a lot of change in the process to create proficiency. We want to, another simple change that we did this year is just any requests coming to facilities for committee work, if that comes in on a PDF, it saves a lot of front-end time. We don't have to translate it to a PDF. We don't have to assume we don't have a link and it's like, is this the right link to the right bill or to, you know, version control? The software will read in and process a PDF document a lot faster than a Word document or something that we're getting in by hand, a hard paper document. We want to look at how many copies are we making? You know, every committee is going to be a little different. Can we provide some analysis on that?
Well, Ms. Juluk, I just want to clarify one point here. Members, we have a facility here in the state office building that handles committee work. We have another one in the Capitol that handles the floor session, basically. Correct. And the committee work requests include, I think, a standard of 75 copies of everything that is handed out that is left up for the public at the top. And so we're talking about the possibility of copying fewer free items for the public, considering how much is done online today. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a standard that comes from the days before, you know, the Internet.
Yep. And Mr. Chair, we do post, the grand majority of our stuff is posted within a day of the hearing. So, yeah, again, and the timing of requests. What we've discovered is specifically in the facilities area, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday are very high level of request. Thursday and Friday drops off quite a bit. Again, working with committees, and sometimes you don't know. Sometimes that's just going to be the rhythm of the business, but maybe earlier in session, you know, how do we look at that? So, again, creating these proficiencies and process changes on the front end so that we don't have to buy these multitudes of machines, that we can reduce our fleet size but still meet the needs of the house and improve our business processes at the same time. So that's kind of what we're looking at within this budget. Again, holding some funds aside, don't jump in and buy everything at once. Try to figure out what do we really need to right-size our fleet and produce the right process in the end.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Juluk, when you just finished your comments, it talked about the purchase and if we're tripling or have the need for tripling the number of machines based upon the legacy machines we have, is there any consideration of, particularly with the amount of maintenance that these machines typically take, is there any value in contrasting a purchase versus a lease arrangement?
Sure.
For those machines? Mm-hmm. From a cash flow, but also from a maintenance perspective, what are your observations about that option?
Sure. And, Mr. Chair, our group did look at that. And so when you lease a machine, you will basically pay for the price of that machine within the 3 years of that lease. Because of the way we our business flow, if you will, is so concentrated within a three-month time period, we actually will get 6 to 7 years out of a machine fairly easily, which is why we've got 12 to 25 years out of some of them. So from a financial standpoint, it didn't quite make sense to do the lease because you would pay full value of that machine over 3 years versus you'd spend the same amount, granted, up front, but you could get use of that machine for 6 to 8 years.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that question. It seems like even with this software to direct traffic, if you will, for these documents, that we're kind of postponing the inevitable of replacing those three very large machines. Does your budget provide for any type of an opportunity to escrow or put a sinking fund in place for somewhere down the line where we could purchase those very large machines as opposed to just kind of, not to be trite, but put a Band-Aid on a wound of this magnitude?
Ms. Juluk.
Yep, Mr. Chair, so after some initial purchases of the software and some replacement of some of our smaller machines, it would have about $230,000 left in the budget, and we would have a $4.4 million carry forward as well
that we could come back and review the need. Working with within the chief clerk's office, the staff person in charge of their printing, who comes from the industry, who we really relied heavily on in this analysis, fairly confident that we could do it within this $230,000. But to your point, to the extent that it's not meeting our needs and we've maximized everything, the idea of leaving funds in the carry forward for other urgent needs is another reason to have that $4.4 million balance.
One final question.
Representative Albright.
Thank you. We go through pallets of paper. I see Mr. Munoz roll in a pallet now that we're starting into the final stretch of the session. It seems like a pallet at the beginning of the week and a pallet at the end of the week, just for the sake of, to your point, not only for the committee members to review the documents, but also the public. And we certainly want to be transparent about what we're doing in committee. But I wonder at what point, Mr. Chair and Ms. Julich, we turn the corner from providing organic material and actually are offering those on an electronic PDF version with any number of electronic devices that any one of us has. I'm just wondering if the time has come or will soon come when we need to take a hard look at what amount of electronic delivery we provide to not only the committee members, and if they want to download it and print it off, they certainly are welcome to do that, as well as for the public dissemination, in anticipation of, to your earlier point, about the amount of copying that we take up. And unfortunately, it grieves me sometimes to see how much paper is delivered in committee or on the House floor, only to end up in the trash moments after it's delivered. When an electronic copy saves resources, it saves time, and saves expense for your department in terms of preparation of those, all the while we can, I think, provide integrity to the system. So just as a thought for the committee going forward, Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if sometime around the interim we might take a closer look at how we might go about that. So just as a partnering effort on that, I'd like to take a look at that.
Ms. Julich?
Mr. Chair and Representative, and I think part of not jumping in July 1st and buying a complete replacement of our fleet, that's the idea of not doing that. It's, can we have some conversations? Where can we go? We know we need some kind of minimal fleet for some things, but what other changes can we look at? Still providing the information to the public, still providing that transparency, but not investing $1 million in a duplicating fleet. What is that right size, and how do we get there?
Representative Albright, I guess I would just add that the operating deficit that the House is under due to the member pay increase it creates a point at which we're looking at almost everything in our operations, and that's why you see a pretty significant change in the budget here in front of us. Coming into this session, I asked our committee staff and the House department heads to go through basically all operations and put together proposals for what the institution needs and where we're falling short. And so specifically with duplicating, we also had the chief clerk and the head of the duplicating in to review it. And so the idea here is that we should start with the approach of not replacing the whole fleet, doing it on a smaller scale, and then look at our operational needs going forward to see how we can reduce those needs to meet the more reasonable price and capacity of the fleet that we're using to replace. I think we've got our money's worth out of the old one. So I think as we look at a new investment, we want to make sure we're looking at our own internal operations at the same time. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to the discussion about the first floor and the ground floor renovation, and I think you had said that you're moving fiscal staff. Now, I know where some of the fiscal staff are. There's a few scattered on the third floor where I'm at and probably elsewhere. Does this $700,000 also include their move and whatever renovations have to be done to the space that they just left? And is it more than just fiscal staff? I think you had said another category as well.
Ms. Julek.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's Fiscal Staff and House Research Department. So the two departments would be co-located between the two floors. It would include costs to move them, but it does not include costs to renovate where they're currently, so either the sixth floor or the third floor. There is a House Space Committee, Representative Albrecht sits on that. That is one of the agenda items amongst a few others on how do we review the rest of the building and the rest of the building needs and how to move forward on that.
Representative O'Neill, I think Representative Albright also wants to weigh in, but I'll let, if it's on the space question, okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm just wondering, I've been up to the sixth floor more often than I care to sometimes, but just wondering, why are we moving them from the sixth floor down to the first and ground floors, other than they're together, I guess, but is, because it's, it seems like a really nice space up on the sixth floor, and maybe I'm missing something, but why are we moving them from the sixth to the first?
Representative Albright, do you want to answer that as a representative of the Space Committee?
I am a representative of the Space Committee, and I actually had a different question for Ms. Julek. I think that she's more prepared to answer the follow-on to that than I am.
Ms. Julek or Mr. McCormick, I don't know. Yes. Mr. McCormick.
Members, the Space Committee convened in 2015, considered moving the reference library, considered moving actual House members into the first floor area. The Space Committee rejected each of those alternatives. The goal set was to create a capacity to move the revisor staff, which is off campus in a rental facility, in and marry it up with the current revisor office. In some sense, this becomes like dominoes. When you take a couple of the dominoes off the table, the library, the House members, the logical decision of the Space Committee at the time was to move House Research and House Fiscal into the space, opening up the sixth floor, allowing them to bring in the revisors. That is going to create some further dominoes, which the Space Committee is going to have to consider, things like relocating LCC functions potentially to the sixth floor, finishing out the third floor space currently used by House Fiscal. If we fund this budget, we're going to have to house the additional support staff for the minority. All that is going to have to be worked out as the dominoes come through to fit everybody into their new spaces.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had no idea we had revisors off campus. That's I did not know that. That's got to be unfortunate for them, as hard as they work and as long as they work, particularly this session with over 5,000 bills being introduced.
Well, Representative O'Neill, you've highlighted the most tense issue and contentious issue between the House and the Senate, and that is who gets what space. Mm-hmm. We had a long LCC budget hearing the other day with hardly any questions until we started talking about space, and then the rhetoric quickly turned to warfare. You know, we are trying to consolidate as best we can, and we have to negotiate with the Senate to get access to that space on the first floor and the ground floor that the minority used to occupy. They claim that's still Senate space, and we have to give them something in exchange. So it's not just dominoes. It's also very careful negotiations.
Who would have known?
All right, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Julek and Mr. McCormick might weigh in on this, but in the space plan that for the domino effect, I would also understand that there is space dedicated towards the Legislative Budget Office. And I'm just wondering how much space that is and where that's located.
Mr. McCormick, I think.
Madam Chair, members, the Legislative Budget Office right now is currently temporarily housed in the basement of the State Office Building. In discussions with the Senate, which are contingent upon the Legislative Budget Office being funded at the end of this session and contingent upon the level of funding for the Legislative Budget Office, the tentative plan is to move the Legislative Budget Office either into the current off-campus space where the revisor staff is located, or there are some discussions about potentially creating a capital space, which would have to be done through legislation. So in the contentious game of risk that we're playing here, I'm going to change my metaphor, the Legislative Budget Office space allocation is clearly one of the pieces that has to come to rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Albright, of course, there's some discussion about whether people want that to exist at the end of this session, too. So to be determined. Other questions? I think that concludes Ms. Julek's presentation. And members, I appreciate your time in going through this budget proposal. It's atypical that we would have open hearings and go through the House budget in this much detail. In the past, it hasn't been preferred to do that. I think that's been on both sides. There's been a certain amount of assumption of not spending as much as we budget. That money goes into the carry forward. The carry forward funds our one-time needs, and nobody asks too many questions. The arrival of the legislative salary increases makes that no longer a tenable approach. And so I thought it was best to be as open and transparent as we possibly can about why we are asking for such a significant budget increase for the House of Representatives. And having the member salary issue, the staff salary question, facilities, duplicating, all of the IT, all of these things, we wanted to find out what we need to do in order to leave the institution in as good a shape as we possibly can for when we are no longer here. And so that's what this budget represents. I also want to thank Ms. Julek for really looking for ways to save money as much as possible, looking for creative approaches to using space in the budget for one-time investments versus ongoing needs. I think we are extremely well-served in our controller, and the department heads and staff here, I think we all recognize, are terrific. It doesn't just happen, though. It does require us to make the investment, do the oversight, have the follow-through, meet with them, hear their needs, and understand the operations. And so I think that is our obligation as well, to make sure that we are not providing a pyramid scheme or a Ponzi scheme of the House budget, which nobody has done in the past. But if we continue to, if we were to try to use one-time funding and carry forward and make it the next legislature's problem, I don't think we would be very responsible. So that's why this budget is in front of us. And so, members, I guess I would look for a motion to approve this proposed budget, which then would send it to the State Government Finance Committee for inclusion in the overall state government finance budget.
So moved.
Representative Herr moves approval of that proposal. Is there a discussion to the budget? Representative New.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I didn't realize that we were actually moving this today. I appreciate the opportunity to ask more questions. I guess my questions would probably be for Ms. Knight, I would assume, but perhaps Ms. Julek, I'm not real sure.
Representative New, I just also want to clarify, this is not approving a House budget for the next year.
Sure, but it's moving it to the next committee. I understand how this works. But so I do have some further questions then, particularly about how we're dealing with staff salaries. And I'm wondering, I've had more time to digest this at this point, and I'm wondering a couple of things. I think last time we met, we heard that 96 staff members would be affected and receive those raises on July 1st. I'm wondering, there are actually almost as many pay ranges that decrease at the top end as there are that increase at the top end. So my question is, do we have any staffers who are bumping up against that top end already who may be in that decrease category? And what's the plan to work with that?
Ms. Gulick.
Mr. Chair, Representative Newt, no one would be above the new decreased higher level at this point in time. To the extent there are people close, so if for example, a merit increase would come into place, that may bump them over. What's been done in the past and what may occur when that has happened in the past, instead of getting a couple things. Maybe I do need Ms. Knight. You're going to claim the newbie card for a little bit.
Ms. Knight, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with answering the question.
Kelly Knight, I'm the Director of HR for the House of Representatives. Mr. Chair and members, what has happened in the past, what we've recommended in our salary resolutions, is for anyone close, so the COLA would move, if we did a COLA would move the range. So that would not cause someone to go over, but the merit could, And in those situations, rather than someone who was at the cap not being eligible for a merit, as was the case when I first started, instead, those individuals would receive the value of that merit as a one-time
bonus,
essentially. So they would receive the value of it. So they would receive some value for that merit increase.
Representative New.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that would not be an ongoing salary increase at that point, though. They would just receive a one-time bonus as recognition, but they would not receive the ongoing salary increase.
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, it would not be built into their base, but that would be a one-time. And if subsequent salary resolutions work the same way and they remained at the cap, it would be handled the same way.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Representative New.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So you had mentioned currently, and in fact, I think this makes a lot of sense moving. It sounds like the current eligibility for promotions takes place every 3 to 4 years. You would propose moving that to every 2 to 3 years. Is there any discretion on that? Or are those automatic? You know, if you start as a legislative assistant one, you are not eligible. You are not able to move to legislative assistant two until at least 3 years. Is that a hard, fast rule? Is there some discretion on that?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair and members, if someone is hired as a legislative assistant one, currently under the current plan, they would not be eligible to go to a legislative assistant two until after 3 years. They would be eligible for any COLA, any merit increases in between there. And NCSL actually recommended the decrease to 2 years and then 3 years for some positions in House Research and the Fiscal Analyst Department in order to keep up with what the Senate is currently doing with their promotional series.
Mm-hmm. Representative New.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And clearly there's a lot of salary overlap in there. How often are staff eligible for raises currently within their salary range, within their current job?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, members, that is up to the Rules Committee to approve the salary plan. So once we have an appropriation, Ms. Julek and I would be coming back with a salary plan. The history has been it's been on an annual basis, but one of the issues that we have run into that we are in the position we are currently is there was a number of years when there were no salary increases. So,
sure.
Representative New.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Was there any consideration in this? You know, one of the problems that we have, and we talked about this a little bit last week when we met, is that really we have a unique system in the legislature and with comp time, and currently we cap comp time at, I think I did the math, and it was 5.5 weeks is what that amounts to. Has there been any consideration to making adjustments to that? You know, I talked to some staff as well, and you know, for a lot of folks, that is really a huge benefit of working here. And it sounds like, I mean, we talked about the turnover, and our turnover is actually relatively low. But once folks have maxed out their comp time, which it sounds like at least a few people already have, then when they work late in the evening, when they come in on a Saturday, they're working for free. Was there any consideration about making adjustments to that, about increasing the cap on what folks can receive for comp time or anything along those lines? Like I said, when I really dug into the salaries, you know, the vast majority of these salary ranges, the top end actually doesn't change for the vast majority. I think 17 positions, the top end actually decreases and 19 increase, and the vast majority stay the same. So I'm not sure that there is going to be, I mean, obviously these 96 staffers who have started, although I think it's pretty miraculous that, you know, with the turnover that we have the capacity to hire that many people. There are that many people who want jobs in the legislature, which I think is really interesting. But like I said, is there any consideration then to those staff that may or may not actually be affected by these changes, but certainly could be affected with no cost to the state, with no cost to the taxpayer, with maybe increased comp time or something along those lines?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair and members, we actually just changed the calculation for comp time this year, and I think by the end of this year we'll have or at least by the end of the session we'll have a good idea as to where most staff are going to end up being. Historically, we have had people who've capped out.
Yeah.
With the change, it allows more people to earn more. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's something that we can certainly look at going forward. But the change was just made for this comp time year.
Representative New.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know, in the past, each category is different, right? Like, I know LAs don't accrue quite as much comp time. Researchers and CAs accrue a ton of comp time. Do you have an idea? I mean, like you said, we've changed the ratio, so that is going to adjust. But in the past, you know approximately how many staff maxed out at that? I think, is it 220 hours? Do you know, do you have an idea of how many folks, even under the old ratio, would max out that comp time?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair and members, I don't have that with me, but we do have that data. Our time card system does populate that. And going back at least when it was an electronic time card system, when we first started the comp time system, it was actually 80 hours was the cap.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Knight, I just briefly looked at the NCSL report, mm-hmm. and I didn't note any observation from that organization with regard to what Representative New was just talking about with comp time. Are we unique as a legislature in the way that we appropriate or observe comp time, and is it in reference to not an unwillingness, but a difficulty in moving other forms of compensation forward, or were there any observations by NCSL or other organizations with regard to the way we handled comp time?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair and members, NCSL did not look at comp time. That's certainly something I can reach out to them. Comp time, when we went to comp time, the Senate had a policy and the House did not. So we were, the early history of it was following the Senate's lead on offering comp time.
Mr. Chair, right. Just as a follow-on, Ms. Knight, then, has the Senate, not that we would follow any dictate that they would put in place, but have you observed that they have made any changes to the way that they handle comp time?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair and members, their comp time policy is different than ours. Both the deductible hours that individuals have to work. I also believe, I'm not 100% certain, but I think that their cap may be lower than ours. I'm just going off the top of my head, but I can certainly get you that information. I know that they also have some differences where it is without approval, they are only allowed to accrue it during session, which for a number of offices, Mr. LeGrave's during the state fair, my office during open enrollment and a transition, caucus staff in the case of bonding tours and in other types of things, I would see that as problematic for our staff. So those are some of the differences that I know between the two entities on comp time.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Knight. This has been very instructive from the comp time, because I hear a lot about it from the staff and kind of a reticence in terms of our count out, as Representative New said, and we're halfway through the session. And not that, you know, that is a reflection in terms of a need for changing the policy, but I do find it interesting that we are hearing more about comp time from people as a form of compensation. And I wonder if, rather than the emphasis on comp time, maybe we should be more reflective of what salaries they do that we do afford and appropriate to members, because in a broader sense, the appreciable value that they bring to our body is through their salary, not so much that we force them to work overtime just to accrue more compensation. And then to the point of when you comp out at 5.5 weeks, literally you're doing, as not charity, but you're doing it gratis. And so I think that's something that we should address, because these people are highly valued, highly trained, and work very, very hard on behalf of us and our constituents. So certainly would like to look into that a little further. Thank you.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the diving deep on the comp time. I think, as Representative Albright has said, this is a major issue with our staff. I think it's a great benefit. Has our HR department, Ms. Knight, looked at different comp times for different positions? Again, I think we are all seeing the 1 and 2 and 3 a.m. emails coming out when they're wrapping up their work. We realize that during the session time, it is super intense, and as majorities switch around here at different times, there's more committees, less committees. Every session has its personality, I think, it's in its uniqueness. Have we, or can we, is it any kind of a state law that we can look at changing? But in our case, can we offer those types of things different for a different classification, again, i.e. the researchers versus an LA? Is that a consideration?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair and members, we've hesitated to pick winners and losers because there will always be that outlier, that LA, that CLA, who ends up working more than a CA of another committee. So we've hesitated to pick winners and losers on something like that. One of the things that we do offer, my department offers, are reports on just the pure overtime hours worked for supervisors, because in the middle of session, that's a good indication for a supervisor. Let's say they have a researcher, or Mr. McCormick has a new researcher, to see, like, wow, why are they working so many more overtime hours than someone else? And it could be that particular issue area has just gotten super hot, and perhaps the supervisor needs to move some resources. And that's kind of an early indication, you know, as to when there's a rub or perhaps an additional need. They may be able to assign additional session-only staff, and we do that for supervisors so that they kind of get an early indication. Some of it they can do things about, sometimes they can't.
And just to follow up, I think that's a really good way to say that. You don't want to have winners and losers. However, as an employer myself, I'm always analyzing the overtime. I don't have comp time, but we actually pay time and a half. But for certain positions, certain times, we need to have that knowledge base to stay there. And if, again, we looked at some of those things for those key positions and the depth of their knowledge that they've attained, and if another week on top of their comp time is something that we can look at down the road, versus maybe it's a new LA who just really isn't very fast and just being swamped. And I know that's the supervisor's role to really help them get caught up. I hope there's a way to kind of manage some of that down the road. And I just think this comp thing is going to help us a lot down the road to not only save some salaries, but also to actually give a better benefit that people with their quality of lives will love to have in the summertime, that I wish I could do. So I think this is a great conversation. So thank you.
For Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess sort of in defense of staff, I like how we've talked about this as if the personalities and the demands of individual legislators don't have any impact on what our staff go through. So I think that kind of speaks to it's hard to set those rules because it may depend on the member, and none of us have control over who the other members are. It's up to those individual districts to elect those folks. So just want to put that on the record.
Ms. Knight?
Mr. Chair and members, one of the other things, too, if we pick different levels for different staff, different positions, our current electronic time card system has one position or one level in there. So if we were going to increase it, I'd recommend increasing it across the board because we would not, and I don't know how we would change it if someone was an LA and then got promoted to a researcher a month into session.
Further questions from members? Seeing none, so we are returning to the HER motion to approve the proposed budget for the House of Representatives to be sent to the State Government Finance Committee for inclusion in their omnibus bill. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a point of clarification. So with your motion to move it to State Government Finance, would it be the intention of the majority that this would travel alone or be included in the omnibus State Government Finance bill? What, just for preparation purposes and understanding what level, not that the State Government Finance bill is a single subject because we carry a lot of agencies, but just what's the path itself that you anticipate for the bill?
Representative Albright, the House budget will go into the State Government Finance omnibus bill. That's the longstanding practice.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I think the motion should be to refer it to Ways and Means, and then Ways and Means would refer it to the State Government Finance division.
Representative Carlson, you are, of course, correct. But we're not actually sending a file. This is more like the Rules Committee is making this proposal and approving the proposal, so I'm not sure. I think it's sort of like a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
I was up in Ways and Means, and I missed part of your discussion of what the original motion was. So, yeah, then your motion is all right.
Okay, thank you, Representative Carlson. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Members, I thank you for your time and attention to this matter. I do think it's worth spending the time to do it and understand the institution that we are privileged to be a part of. And if there's no further discussion, we are adjourned.